The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. In this programme, we take a bit of time to review the new album by TV on the Radio, and in the feature with no name, I look back at an overlooked gem by Chad and Jeremy. Don't worry, I'll be explaining it all soon. Plus, there's a live track from Licky D too, all in Music Weekly from The Guardian. Joining me for this week's Feast of Fun is Rosie Swash. Welcome back to the programme, Swash. How was your holiday?
Thanks. It was really incredible. Maybe the best ever.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Amazing. Where did you go?
I went to LA. Yeah. I went to Palm Springs, which I was just telling Rob all about, which is really incredible. It's where a lot of people go to retire, and it's also got a massive gay population, so it's pretty lols.
Fantastic. Yeah. That sounds brilliant. Alongside Rosie Swash is Rob Fitzpatrick. Hello, Rob.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good indeed.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm pleased to hear it. We're going to kick off this week with a look at TV on the Radio's new album. They topped guardian.co.uk/musicsalbumoftheyear poll in 2008. And they're interviewed in this week's guide by Mr. Fitzpatrick here. Let's have a listen to a few tracks from Nine Types of Light. We'll start with the album's opening track, which is called Second Song. Then Lord knows, I tackle it full throttle. May I illuminate the nameless, faceless saints of these odd and open graves. Man, I like that. That's TV on the Radio, second song, the opening track from the album. A slight shift in a more commercial direction, I think.
Yes.
It's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say, isn't it, really, whether it's a shift, as in let's shift, in a,
yeah.
Or whether it is. I think you could probably argue both cases. I mean, there are circumstances surrounding the record in the sense that, for instance, Dear Science was the last one of their records that would be released, certainly in this country, by 4AD. So it's now completely within the kind of the sort of major label realm. So you can't, you know, there's surely.
Who are they
some,
on now?
Well, it's Polydor.
Oh,
yeah, it's Polydor. So it's all, you know, the universal blanket
that's
been pulled up over their heads. You can't help but think there is an added pressure, perhaps, in that kind of way. That might be. I might just be assuming that. But also there is a change. You know, Tunde was saying, when I was speaking to him, that he has had a sort of a shift in his attitude, you know, in the way that he looks at things, in the way, you know, he's sort of very much a kind of, he's sort of learned to stop worrying, was how he explained it to me.
Interesting.
But did he say why? Because they never tell you why.
He did. Tunde, that's very interesting.
He's on heroin.
Why? Yeah, he's on heroin. He doesn't care anymore.
Just takes the edge.
I'm so rich and so high, I don't care about anything. Well, fair enough. And thank you very much. That'll be all I need. No, he said that basically what happened is he realised that that negativity and panic, he was a bit of a panicker, I don't know, had become like a security blanket for him. And that it was something that he would put, instead of doing anything else, he would sort of worry about doing stuff. And so it was something, as he described it, as defaulting to the negative. And obviously there's been a lot of changes in the band, and obviously Gerard, the bass player, is, you know, they recently announced he's sort of battling cancer and things. You know, so there's been some big changes within them, and I think part of his change of mood is a thinking, as he said, you know, you can spend your whole life worrying about what other people are going to do and what's going to happen, but it won't change anything. Mm. So actually just sort of, it's a kind of embrace the moment.
And so it's a sort of change of mental tack.
Certainly for him.
That has influenced the sound of the record.
Yeah, certainly for him.
Shall we hear another song from it? Shall we hear Caffeinated Consciousness? So used are we to the cause of life. I'm optimistic.
The sun to a greener heart.
TV on the radio there with Caffeinated Consciousness. I have to say, I actually, you know, you realise that it's going to be a change of direction that will upset some people because, you know, a band like TV on the radio, people want them to stay underground and a bit spiky and difficult. I applaud what they've done insofar as I always found TV on the radio to be one of those bands that I admired rather than adored, you know? Rosie, were you a sort of fan?
Yeah, I was, and particularly of Dear Science. It was my favourite album of 2008, I think.
If you can remember that far
back.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's a hell of a long time ago now, 2008, wow.
But I also really like the solo stuff they've done since, which what I like is one of those examples of a band going off and doing lots of different things and you're like, oh, I see how it all comes together. So Tunde is talking about having a different mental track, but Kip Malone went off and made the record as Rain Machine, which was actually pretty dark.
Yeah. Mm.
And he's the person who on this record delivers a few of the kind of little lines that I was listening to it yesterday, and on the song No Future Shock, he just says, did they fill you up before they robbed you blind? He slips in this little...
Yeah.
And that was the aspect, that kind of paranoid viciousness that came out on Dear Science, which I think a lot of people hoped.
Yeah.
They never clarified it when I interviewed them, but people felt it was about capturing the mood between Bush and Obama.
Interesting.
And it was certainly, you know, in lots of ways it seemed to capture that.
Yeah.
That absence, that political absence on this album, I don't think you miss it as much, because apart from the fact that it's got this real warmth to it, you've also got people like Kip Malone still delivering these little sucker punches.
I interviewed them just as Dear Science came out, and it was just before Dear Science came out, and Obama had just been elected, and I remember Kip at the time. Kip, I call him Kip because he's my pal. The Kipster.
I call him K.
Sometimes
whatever.
I call him the Kipster, Kip, K, you know.
Kipmeister.
The Kipmeister, obviously. DJ Kippy Kip sometimes, not always. And he was saying to me that he felt, you know, nobody should get too excited about the kind of the Obama effect, because you know, nobody knew what was going to happen. And because at the time it's easy to forget now how everyone's going, oh God, this amazing thing, everything's going to change. And actually, it didn't really. Nothing, no vast changes happened.
No.
And he was, you know, and it was expected of them also as a black rock group to sort of go, oh yeah, we fully support everything that's going on with that. And he was saying at the time then, and still now, you know, he's a vastly different kind of character, isn't he? Too?
Yes, yeah. You know,
with a whole different kind of ball game. But he was saying that he and Tunde went over to Algeria and played with Tanara when.
Oh, wow, really?
Which sounded like one of the all-time great sort of things to do on your time off from the day job. But you know, had a sort of very profound effect
going
and playing with them. Yeah, so...
In what sense? Bands always say this, because Tung said that to me. Well, they played with Tanara with them.
Yeah.
Well, it's had a very profound effect on what we do.
Yeah. Who said that?
Tung.
Oh, right, okay,
I actually was in the studio with Tung and Tanara when while they were rehearsing for the joint tour. And it was kind of amazing.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously Tung's shtick is based a lot around sampling and,
and
this kind of thing. And then there were these guys that just sort of do it.
Yeah, just do it.
And there's
this
great disparity between
hours.
Them because, Tung were absolutely crapping themselves about the whole thing. And obviously Tanara, when, you know, if you have ridden into battle, you know,
with your guitar,
with your guitar in one hand and a machine gun in the other, you know, playing the Bexhill Pavilion with a sort of alt
nice
folk
building
band,
as it is,
beautiful, you know, Art Deco surroundings there, didn't really seem to hold that much fear for the members of Tanara, you know.
No. I think what Kip meant was actually the sense of going to, well, they both talked about it a lot, but what Kip talked about was one of the sense of going to Africa, and he said that as a child he'd gone to Africa with his parents on a kind of religious tour.
Oh, really?
But going there with them, he said the thing that was the most profound about it was being in Africa, but then also the idea that he spent so much of his life flying across the Atlantic to, you know, sort of Europe and places, and thinking, well, actually, every time I do that, just for another hour or so, I could be in Africa. And it's that kind of thing of like, I do this all the time, and yet this place that
seems
means
mysterious.
So much, but actually it's something that he desires a lot more, you know, that kind of a contact with that kind of environment.
Fascinating. This is all really intriguing and deep stuff, isn't it? It's good.
None of this is in the interview, obviously. It's just a load of kind of toilet humour, really.
Yeah, but you mean you're saving the gold for us.
Yeah,
I'm quite serious when you said that, Alexis.
Well, I thoroughly expect everybody who comes on this podcast to save of their best stuff for us, and not, you know,
not writing,
the, not the in primitive the, form of
yeah,
print.
The decrepit yeah. and dying the print media,
dead tree press.
Let's hear another track from Nine Types of Light, the new TV on the Radio album. This is Keep Your Heart. Kneeling above this slave body, teach Superman to fly. How am I gonna keep your heart? How am I gonna keep your heart? If the world all falls apart, how am I gonna keep your heart? TV on the Radio with Keep Your Heart, a track from their new album Nine Types of Light. I was just saying while that was playing, one of the things this album reminds me of is the last Yesayer album, in that you get this sense of a band that were kind of a Brooklyn arty, you know, collective or whatever, discovering the joy of pop music a little bit too. I don't think it's quite as dramatic a shift as the Yesayer album, because the first Yesayer album was pretty heavy going and not much fun, and then the new one sounds like, you know, Red Box, somebody else. But, you know, I probably my favourite album of last year, the Yesayer album, for saying that. And I really like that sense of a band kind of just embracing melodies and embracing tunes in this really wholehearted, non-ironic way.
Yeah.
Were the circumstances in which it was recorded different? It sounds very sun-kissed.
Well, it's recorded in LA.
Recorded
in LA. Because obviously Dave, Big Dave from the band, moved to LA.
Right.
Where, of course, he did his Maximum Balloon record,
which was really good.
And they went there, but Tunde was saying that he didn't particularly like the kind of recording in LA aspect, or he didn't particularly like LA. You know, sorry, Rosie.
Should have gone with Rosie.
Should have gone with Rosie. Actually, I'll tell him that next time. Don't go.
Just add that tagline to your life, guys.
Should have gone with Rosie.
Should have gone with Rosie.
No, he described it as like a corporate suicide mission.
Wow.
Well, I still don't really understand what he means by a corporate suicide mission.
Because a corporate suicide mission would imply to me the making of a record that a corporation can't sell.
Yes, or alternatively, it could mean that the corporation wants to kill the people making it. Wow, that's quite an allegation, isn't
wow.
it?
Wow.
Not that I am saying that about Universal Records and TV on the Radio.
And can I just add that I don't think Tunde is on heroin either.
Neither of those things are true, and I didn't mean them in
But
any
the sort
way.
Of LA thing seems to have had a sonic yes. impact. I mean, it's easy to say this sort of thing, but, you know.
I know, the other thing about it is it, you could say, well, yeah, it's got this sort of sun-kissed elephant. Well, it has a bit, but then also, if they could have recorded it in a basement in Sweden, and it might still have sounded like that. But there certainly is that element to it. It has got a brighter, sharper kind of feel. Because the other thing we didn't mention is the other word that came out a lot with Tunde was love.
Right.
But the songs, actually the songs sound like end of love songs, ones on here.
That's love.
It comes and it goes.
It comes and it goes. It ebbs and it flows.
So it's kind of an album.
It's the search
fused with romance.
Yes, absolutely. The search for love, looking for love. Mm-hmm. What does love mean?
Love in the shadows.
Love in the shadows.
That's good. That's interesting. Pop music about love.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, I know.
Artists of the world.
What will they think of next? Songs about love.
I know what we should do on this next record.
The Bush thing didn't get on so well.
I've been thinking about writing these things. They're called love songs.
I met this girl. Right? She's kind of amazing.
Do we think it's going to turn people off, or do we think they're one of those bands that are at a sort of commercial tipping point where all you need is that kind of slightly more, you know, slight push in the direction of pleasing your mainstream six music or whatever listener, and, you know, grand things will happen and they'll be headlining festivals this time next year?
No.
I can't remember the question.
No to what part of that?
Unfortunately, I don't ever think that TV on the Radio are going to be commercially huge. I just don't think it's within their DNA. But I also don't think that they're ever going to be abandoned by the kind of blog fraternity.
Right.
Like, hey, man, I found the original OK Computer. What's it? OK Calculator. CD hidden
down
in the back
of my sofa.
I don't think they're either ever going to be abandoned by their fans. So I think it's all right. I also don't think that they are commercially driven. I know that.
No, I'm sure they're not, but I'm just saying, I'm sure that, I really don't think that was their intention. I think it'd be astonishing.
But it would be nice if the record where they all had a sense of, hey guys, you know, we're getting on a bit, one of us is apparently falling in love, we're pretty happy.
Hey guys, we're getting on a bit.
Let's just chill out. What's the record that did really well? Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, the one thing that I think is missing from this album, which there was the last few records that TV and the radio have done, and a lot of their big tracks have had this real sense of them howling at the moon.
Yeah. Mm.
And that isn't there. Mm. And if you think about the opening to Dear Science, which was Halfway Home, which was just like really just came rushing at you. And I went back and over, because I wasn't ever sure what that song was about. And I went back and I was pretty convinced it was about Obama at the time, which I'm sure they'll tell me it's not.
Yeah.
But the opening lyrics are, the lazy way they turned your head into a rest stop for the dead and did it all in golden blue and grey, which just sounds like,
what
you know,
they pissed. That sounds like rubbish to me. But
I think...
You know, these guys just make this stuff up, right?
Yeah. But it made me think of, you know, that whole album is full of, you know, talk about gallows and evil and the roots of evil. And, like, basically, I just, it felt like if they were going to talk about what Obama had achieved, you could look at a song like that as saying, for years, the gold and blue and grey, which made me think of the Confederate Civil War uniform.
Wow, man, you're so
good. Oh, my God.
You know, they're going to
so
piss in your them. Mind. These
the
people are going to piss all over
again.
You, but you're going to achieve something anyway because you're not going to stop. And that element is like... Wow. We're just going to sing about love now, you know. But that's
yeah. But
so
hey,
okay.
What's more deep than love, right?
Exactly, Rob.
I mean, you know,
nothing.
Maybe how deep is love?
How deep is
Listen,
your love?
Listen, guys, we've all been reading the tearjerker piece in this week's G2, so I don't want to get too deep here because it might get
crying.
Weepy.
I know, terrible. Bit of Stevie Wonder. I just called "Say I Love You," set me off. Now. Are there, do you think, different musical influences that have been brought to bear? I heard a bit of a sort of slightly housey piano at one point.
There's a little bit of housey piano. There's some. There's a touch of banjo in there. Something that's, I believe it or not. I can't tell you whether it definitely
Why
is banjo.
Always funny.
But there's definitely on Killing Crane. So there are elements like that in there. There are other little things. There are definitely other little parts in there. And there's a slight sort of disco-y element to some of it as well. But, you know, they're all, everything, it sort of comes in and out. It's like waves, you know.
I think the sort of thing that I like about it, ultimately, as well as the fact that it's just good pop songs, is that they always struck me as a band that were, and this is not a criticism in some ways, having millions of ideas at once and actually having a bit of difficulty sort of marshalling marshalling them into four.
I think you can hear that on the tracks that we just heard then. You can hear that each one of them has got, even just on those little snippets, it's got five or six different ideas coming in and going out immediately, you know. And that's a really good thing. In answer to your earlier question, I think it would be a real shame if anybody sort of went, oh, well, I'm not going to like them anymore because they've started writing good songs. I mean, that was, to me, that seems perverse. I know some people do that. But I think that also they deserve more than a load of people on blogs going, I really love this band.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is, they're genuinely really interesting. They're really interesting people, which is maybe, as you know, if you spend a lot of your time talking to people in bands that are really interesting, you go, oh my God, they're a really interesting band. And they go,
they still write songs which make me think a lot about what they're writing.
Yeah,
and that,
clearly.
And that's happened on this album as well. So.
Which doesn't happen with an awful lot of what you might call pop groups.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. TV on the Radio, they're interviewed in The Guardian Guide. The album's out on April 11th. Let's get them to play us out, as if they're there in the studio.
Take it away, guys.
Take it away. TV on the Radio, this is Will Do. Your love makes a fool of you, you can't seem to understand. A heart doesn't play by rules, and love has its own demand. But I'll be there to take care of you if ever you should decide that you don't want to waste your life in the middle of a lovesick lullaby. But anytime I'll do, my love. TV on the Radio with Will Do. You can actually listen to that album on the Guardian website.
Yes. guardian.co.uk/music/TV on the radio, and it'll be up there.
Go there, check it out for yourself. Okay, we've still got a live track to come from Licky Lee, but it's the first feature with no name for quite a while now. We haven't had one on the programme for a bit, and it involves me. I'm going to take you through a long-forgotten, indeed possibly never remembered in the first place, gem by Chad and Jeremy. The album comes from 1968, and it's called The Ark. This is the title track. Chad and Jeremy from 1968, from their album The Ark, which is the last album they ever made. Well, what I'll start with, first of all, is my pitch for The Ark that I tend to say to people. And, you know, obviously you need a degree of a strong, a strong stomach for sort of posh-accented English whimsy.
I love that.
So do I.
Count me in for that one straight away.
What I tend to say to people is, if you like Odyssey and Oracle by the Zombies, have I got an album that you probably haven't heard for you? The story of Chad and Jeremy is really intriguing, I think. They were never very well known in Britain. No. And what happened to them, it's quite a modern story. They were the first band, I think, ever to get hit with the Toffs Can't Rock thing.
Wow.
Because they had one hit. They emerged sort of in the wake of the Beatles around 1964. Had one big hit. And then it was discovered that one of them, I can't remember whether it was Chad or Jeremy, had served as some kind of usher or page boy at the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II.
Wow.
Which certainly knocks the guy from Mumford & Sons, having gone to quite a posh school, into a cocked hat. And there's these pictures of him with like ruffs on and stuff like that. Yeah. And they're basically kind of...
Which is a good look in itself, which is
an amazing look for a 60-year-old,
especially in 1968. Yeah. Probably where he got the idea.
They were sort of run out of Britain in a sense. They became a joke in Britain as a result of this. After one single, went to the States, where of course they love all that. Went on to have a pretty successful career in the States. You hear their music a lot more on sort of oldies radio in America than you do in Britain. But they still did kind of slightly cheesy things. They're on Batman. There's an episode of the 60s.
You say that like it's a bad thing. I'm waiting for the bad stuff to happen. Everything I'm hearing so far is great.
It gets better. Okay. They appeared in an episode of Batman on which a Catwoman stole Chad and Jeremy's voices, and Batman and Robin sent to sort it out. And then they went psychedelic, as bands, had to do in 1967, to the absolute detriment of their career in America. They released an album called... Of Cabbages and Kings,
Can smell a rainbow.
Yeah, it probably is. Listen to the Flower People stuff, which didn't do very well. And then they followed it up with this, which was their last album, which was, I think, I'm right in saying, certainly arranged by and possibly produced by Gary Usher, who's famed for his work with the Beach Boys. Mm. Among others. Gary Usher spent so much money making this album, he was immediately fired from his position as he had a sort of in-house job at Columbia Records and was fired from it. The album didn't sell at all. I just think it's a lovely, lovely record. Mm. It's sort of a beautiful kind of bit of pastoral, baroque, psychedelic pop. And it's just a record that nobody seems to know about. Mm. I assume it came out in Britain when it was released, but didn't. Should we hear another track off it?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's.
This is Imagination.
Look out when you go upstairs. It always knows when you are there. Always there behind your back. That's no name and it's dressed in black. You know it's incredibly tall. You know that it's more than a feeling. It lives where the wallpaper's peeling.
Chad and Jeremy with Imagination, one of the tracks from their 1968 album, The Ark. I'm going to open this one up to the floor. Had anybody here heard of Chad and Jeremy before? And what do you make of this album that I have brought in?
I had never heard of Chad and Jeremy before. It's like saying, my name is Rob Fitzpatrick, I'm an alcoholic. No, I'd never heard of them before, but I have... everything you said about them I liked, and everything I've heard about them I liked. I mean, I don't know what it is, but I have a kind of an emotional pull to that sort of thing. and not the kind of whimsy side of it, but the sort of just the sounds on it. And when the first track played, I immediately thought, well, that bit where he goes, the arc, that would just make a great song, just sample those first eight bars. And that's a great song in itself. But just what I love about records like that is that they're full of a sense of kind of optimism. There's a kind of optimism and enthusiasm, and it's very difficult looking down the sort of 43-year lens and imagining what they must have been thinking when they did it. But with the sort of rosy glow of nostalgia about it, there is a sense that people were still pushing at the edges of what you could do with music and going. And there was still loads of corners that no one had run into yet.
But it was, this was out in 68, so Astral Weeks?
Would have been, it was released in 68, wasn't it?
And
yeah.
That's a sort of vintage year for incredible albums, isn't it? Is it Aretha Franklin's, you know, so... I was saying to you when we were listening to the track then, there's a few tracks on the arc that made me think of Bowie, but of course Bowie had only had David Bowie out then, which wasn't even remotely like his later stuff. I wouldn't say I've got the strongest stomach for this kind of pastoral. I did like it, and actually listening to their... I went on YouTube and did... Have you ever done it where you just go to search for an artist and someone somewhere has made one of those 40 mix videos?
Oh, yeah.
So you just put it on and leave it.
Yeah.
And so there was a definite shift between, this is a summer song.
Yeah, which was a huge hit
which I liked because it was the summer yesterday. And I was like, it's a summer song. Yeah. But
it's like they've written it about today. Yeah. But it's like 43
years guys.
Ago. Yeah.
You should write a song about love.
Yeah. Imagine putting love and summer together.
My God,
that would be.
But I don't know how much you know about their biography, but was this, what was the arc, a result of their introduction, like a lot of musicians of this time, to...
Oh no, she's going to say the D word.
She's going to drop the D
bomb. The other thing which I think a few musicians should consider when it comes to pop music, right?
Try taking some drugs.
Yeah. For God's sake, man, take some drugs.
Acid.
Yeah. I don't know. I honestly
it's a very interesting point, actually. I will come back to it in a moment. Sorry. Go on.
Your brains.
It's interesting you say acid. You say that about acid because I did a piece with Bootsy Collins, which is out in about a week. And he was talking about acid and how that... And this is very much the same sort of time, you know, sort of very late 60s, very early 70s. And I won't go into too much detail because there's quite a lot in the piece, but basically he did acid a lot. And found it a completely kind of liberating experience within a band. And when all the band were doing it together, apart from his brother who never did it, he just drank. They would just play for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and just love it. And they'd love to rehearse, they'd love to play, they'd love to gig, they'd love to record. But then later on, they'd, you know, be smoking weed doing that. But then a few years later, then cocaine started to come in and it just killed the groove completely because suddenly, instead of doing something, doing one thing once and then just going, right, we've got 8 hours to, you can just keep going back and keep going. And people go and wander off and someone's going out the room going, and then someone's coming in, oh, I need a drink, oh, I need some more fags, and all that. And that was it. What the thing that LSD brought us together, cocaine blew us apart.
When we were in LA, we were listening to the Weekend mixtape. I don't know if you talked about the Weekend on the pods.
We did, we were talking about them. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And we were talking about how hip-hop in general has been is so synonymous with weed and Weekend haven't hidden the fact that coke is a big part of their image. They did a promo where they had some scantily clad women doing lines. I don't know, you know, if they were actually doing lines, but yeah, it was really cool.
Doing lines is cool.
But if you listen to that album, I was like, I was like, put it on again, but I wasn't really enjoying it when we were listening to it. And there's all these references to, like, you know, this girl who's like probably going to die before the next time you see her, but she's so fucking hot, so just come over and fuck me. And it's like, it was a coke record in the most complete sense, and not like the sense of those, you know, huge rock bands who discovered coke and made ridiculous music but that they thought was good. It is like a homage to what it's like to do coke.
Many records.
Because it's horrible, just like doing coke. I'm not actually enjoying this experience, and yet I'm compelled to do more.
Yeah.
And they've made that kind of record because I just felt something about it that was going through me in a way that I didn't like.
Interesting.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because they've definitely got that slightly 80s, you know what I mean, a little bit like gangs and bands like that.
Yeah.
I suppose one aspect of that sound, and particularly if you're going to take that 80s sound and make it a bit weirder, is that thing like Avalon by Roxy Music. It always strikes me as a record made, which once again, obviously it wasn't, by some sort of
allegedly
yuppie o'clock in the morning, going totally insane because he's taking too much coke.
And the only thing you can listen to when you're that high on drugs is something as soft and as linear as that, you know.
You know, so that's kind of an intriguing thing.
How we got to the Weekend from Chad and Jeremy.
Yeah, but no, I think the thing is that within there, you were saying about, you know, Dukes and drugs, but you sort of like do the right drugs, and there is that thing that's where you get that sense that there is overbrights, overstimulated, super saturated kind of feel to it that would come from perhaps opening your mind with
and also
illegal drugs.
A great production. You know, you can hear
a great production,
and also incredibly well produced,
but great musicians as well. Yeah. Yeah. People, like, every single thing you hear on it is played by someone really good at doing what they do, and that's another thing that's forgotten, I think, or is so many bands now are kind of is one really talented guy and doing something, but they,
someone on a bit of software.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of software, but on records like that, you've got people who probably some guys like, you know, 63 at the time playing the bass, but he's amazing because he's been playing it for 40 years. Yeah, he just came in that day, did it, and it's one of those session guys.
Totally. So it's LA kind of Gold Star Studios.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of session guys. I should add a caveat. This isn't a great album all the way through. It tails off very dramatically.
That's
the last
fine.
Two tracks on it, absolute stinkers. For some reason, they decided to conclude this beautiful kind of epic melodic album with a cover of You Need Feet, which was a 1959 novelty single by Bernard Breslau of I don't know why they chose
that. Might
to do
not have been their idea. That might have been we're back to record company pressure, right?
Can you imagine that? Yeah. I can't imagine the sort of
okay, what are we going to do?
Hey,
Columbia?
Guys.
Hey guys, I've had the greatest idea. You.
I love this guy.
You seen any Carry On films?
Carrying the On or something like that. I don't know. It's the Carry On. I don't know.
But look, I think it's a beautiful, beautiful album. I think one of the reasons that I love it so much is I'd got to a stage when I heard it where I thought, I have heard all the great old records now. I've been doing this for a very, very long time. And I literally, like I've never heard of them, and I really fell in love with it. Chad and Jeremy's The Ark. You can find it on iTunes and Spotify. And actually, if you go on MySpace, you can stream the whole album as well, which is quite good. Let's end with, this is my favourite track from the album. This is Pipe Dream. Right, some of you, just before we go, some of your tweets and comments from last week. Dave Portivo was the first comment, and unlike most first commenters, it actually got around to listening to the programme before posting, so well done, Dave Portivo. He agreed with our stance about repulsive sexual R&B, which said... It all went off in your absence, Rosie. It was it's been murder. I love The Dreams, Love King, which has to be the most sexist cliché. It's set hip-hop / R&B back 20 years, and is the most disgustingly boastful nonsense I've ever heard. SV80 took us to task about the Timothy Bloom video. It's a video in which the man and woman are presented as equals, rather than one being clothed and ogling the other, and fundamentally a celebration of African-American bodies, reclaiming the imagery from the sleazier side of pop culture. Well, that's told us.
Yeah.
Good. Nice one.
Think on.
And JT1992 said that comparing Rebecca Black to Britney was a bit harsh. It is
on
clear.
Who?
I think on Britney.
Right. We talk about Rebecca Black in tomorrow's TV on the Radio feature.
Wow.
In The Guardian Guide.
She said, it is clearly a poor song, and for the most part, Femme Fatale is a very good pop record. I think she means Friday by Rebecca Black is a poor song.
Right, yeah.
I get the point that it may seem a bit soulless because it is by Britney, but you can make the same criticism about Girls Aloud, Rihanna, etc.
Interesting.
Interesting point. I think that, the deep, soulful vocals of Cheryl Cole are being a bit undersold there. Yeah. But anyway, thanks for all your comments and retweets this week. You can follow us at Guardian Music Weekly Pod, all one word, with capital M, capital W, capital P. Or you can leave a longer comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. That is all for now, my friends. Thanks to Rosie, as ever.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you back.
Yeah, it's nice to be back.
Hey. And thank you to Rob.
Thank you very much for having me.
A pleasure as ever. We'll be back next week. I'm Alexis Petridis, and the programme was produced by Peter Sale, and also by Scott a bit. He was sort of helping out, although he was ill. Anyway, we're going to leave you with that live track from Licky Lee. This is Love Out of Lust.
Rather die in your arms than die lonesome. For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.